Bat and Spider 53, Curse of the Cat People. Friend of the show Yoli says, an enjoyable follow-up to Cat People. The overall vibe is different. It's not as atmospheric and moody as the original, but Curse certainly has its own charm. Basically, we're going to find out very soon because, as we talked about last week, this is a special episode where we're just getting right to the heart of the matter.
I mean, Dale's, you know, he's ready to go. He's going on vacation. So we're slipping one in here real quick, recording ahead of time. So that you guys don't suffer and miss out on an episode. We would rather
I wouldn't
break our bodies and our minds by recording too much than to make you guys go without. That's what kind of parents we are.
Yeah, we would rather put ourselves out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Record double.
Yeah. I'm not a social person. This kills me, Dale. I hope the listeners realizing the sacrifice I'm making by talking to you two nights in a row.
It's tough.
I'm exhausted.
Especially after all the biz devving we did last night after the shows. It's
speaking of biz dev, okay. I know this is just the meat. Like we don't even have the potatoes in this episode, but
no potatoes.
Today I got it. Got a stick in my craw? I don't know. I started a Twitter account for ourselves, for official Bat and Spider Twitter account. So it's Bat and the letter N, like we're Guns N' Roses, Spider. Spoiler, somebody actually had at Bat and Spider. I'm not saying that you should bully this guy or harass him. I would never say that for him to give up the name to us. I would never do that. You know, he's had it since 2012. It wasn't malicious. He may only have like 9 followers. I don't know. It is what it is.
He maybe hasn't tweeted anything in 9 years.
But he owns the name. It's fair and square, Dale. There's nothing we can do about it.
He owns the name. Maybe somebody with some money.
Or, yeah, some sort of pool down at...
Some sort of pool.
Twitter, the Twitter offices down at the commercial part of town.
Probably. Right, down at the, probably, what is it, Union Station?
Yeah.
Candlestick Stadium over in San Francisco.
Commercial Street. One of those big office buildings.
Speaking of the meat that we're just meat. This is just meat. I before the show,
okay,
Chuck. This is like a mail call, but it's better than a mail call. They had these random ass Reese's on clearance at the Harris Teeter.
What it marshmallow top Reese's peanut butter cups?
Marshmallow top.
I have never seen
Reese's peanut butter cups. Neither have I.
I keep tabs. Are you in a test market, Dale? Are you in a Reese's test market?
I mean, this is the research triangle. This is the Silicon Valley of the East.
Wow.
So maybe.
What are those things? Malamars? Are they really big down there? Nah. Where you live? Maybe they're trying to horn in on some local candy.
Yeah, maybe some local delicacy, you know?
It's kind of like how...
Your Goo Goo Clusters.
I don't know what that is.
Right, yeah. Exactly, because you're not from down here.
It's like how Jell-O is like one of the most popular foods in Utah. Did you know that? They love Jell-O.
I did not know that.
They love Jell-O. I don't know why.
Wow, just Utah. Is.
So maybe
Utah, get maybe at us.
Mallow is big stuff down there.
Chuck, look at my eyes right now. Yeah. Look at these fat jowls. Team Reese's all the way.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I just had a Reese's.
Yeah.
I had a mini egg. Reese's mini egg. Here's my wrapper, Dale. Yellow for the Easter season.
Beautiful. The mini eggs are nice because you could still get 2 bites out of it. I take a bite. And then I savor it in my mouth and I let everything melt away.
I know it's popular to complain about that, you know, all these chocolate companies, they're shrinking all the candies, like, you know, year over year, you know, if you can tell they're shrinking. Like, I mean,
year over year.
I can't actually tell because it happened so slowly, but I gotta say, these are the perfect size. You know, the larger size cups, they're good, but sometimes it's too much peanut butter.
This episode's sponsored by the Reese's Company.
We just got off a Zoom call with the Reese's people. And
great people. Great for even wanting to being able to meet us at 9:30 p.m.
Eastern. I mean, they came to us. It was just a surprise. We weren't even looking for any sponsorship, but here we are. And now I've got two giant Reese's eggs for slippers on my feet. You wouldn't know it because this is a radio show, but
you wouldn't know it because we're not the podcast hosts that brag.
I would never do that. I would never shove it in anyone's face like that.
But you look on Twitter soon at Bat N Spider.
Just think, like Guns N' Roses. That's how you're gonna remember it. Like GNFNR.
BNFNS.
Yeah. We should make a rip off the GNFNR logo and make it BNFNS. File that away for later. I'll tell my secretary to write that down on a post-it note.
Live biz devving. Dale Andrews verbal edit hour 30 minute 35. Remind Chuck via note.
What was the original joke? Were you gonna say pictures of my Reese's cups feet on that Twitter account? Was that the joke you're heading towards before?
No, I was trying to push it towards like some sort of synergy sponsorship on Twitter. But I realized the journey to get there would have been way too exhausting. Yeah,
I'm already exhausted.
And then to explain Twitter synergy.
No, let's
branding. No,
I'm 5 minutes away from shutting down the Twitter account. So.
Yeah. Yeah. What is this? A masterclass? What are we here? We're here to talk about Curse of the Cat People, okay?
Curse of the Cat People.
Ooh, meow.
You don't know how many movies we watch where I just want someone to say the title like in a booming voice, like especially up front, just someone introducing us. Because like a title like Curse of the Cat People, that's a powerful title. Yeah. You just want it. I want it presented to me in a powerful way. Should we get right into it, Dale? 1944, Curse of the Cat People.
1944, Robert Wiseman's first directorial effort.
Yeah.
If I may.
It's still produced by Val Lewton. I wondered if he was alive. So his hand must have, I forget what year he died, but because he died young, but I get, he still had a credit. So I assume he still had a hand in this, which I was glad to see.
Dying hand.
But yeah, continuing on from the original Cat People, the daughter of Ollie and Irena is now a little girl living in Tarrytown, New York. She's got trouble making friends and prefers the company of her imaginary make-believe friend. But daddy hates Amy's proclivities for the make-believe, and he's worried that she is going to inherit her birth mother Irena's psychosis. This is it, Dale. Curse of the Cat People.
A 70-minute feature.
God.
70 minutes.
You don't know the joy I get when I see a movie that's an hour and 10 minutes in length. Because I know how doable it is. We don't need three, 4 hour movies, especially when you're doing Curse of the Cat People. Though, I gotta say, this movie surprised the heck out of me, and I would have watched a 2 hour, 2.5 hour version of this, because I thought, there's substance here there's unsaid meat on the bone. There is something going on with this movie that I haven't cracked yet, and I wanted to crack before we recorded this, but maybe I'll leave it up to the viewers to throw in their two cents, the listeners.
And that's what the cat people would do.
because, this movie lacks cats, first off. We should preface that. There's one black cat in the beginning, and there's some taxidermy cats in the background, but nobody turns into a cat in this, Dale. Spoilers. Which you would think would be a big disappointment. And I was kind of bummed, but Man, what I got in place of that, I was enraptured. Enraptured.
I think what this does, I mean, you see Curse of the Cat People, you see the panther on the movie poster. Yeah. It's like the ultimate kind of bait and switch or rope-a-dope situation with Curse of the Cat People. It sucks you in thinking you're going to get more from the first movie, but ultimately, it's not even really a horror movie. It's,
no.
I mean, it's real family drama. It's real mental health. It's a look into mental health of everybody involved.
Yeah. And also, and like generational, I mean, almost calling back to our Brood guest appearance in Cinernauts. This almost, you know, there was some connective tissue there with the idea of like generational mental health.
Mm-hmm.
In this, which is, you know, it's an interesting territory for a movie from 44.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And, you know, it's not a horror movie, but they do this great thing by tying in, because of the setting, they're in Tarrytown, which is where Legend of Sleepy Hollow takes place. They do this great thing of, like, they talk about the Legend of Sleepy Hollow, and it's like, it's in our little girl, Amy, she's like the main character. Like, it's always in her head, and there's an old woman who tells her the story of Sleepy Hollow. And it's just sort of like, it's atmosphere that's added that kind of makes it, that just like adds this Sleepy Hollow, like old haunted feeling.
Yeah.
That I really loved, even though you're in like a normal suburban house with a little white girl who's, you know, just walking around the neighborhood, you know, like it's very much in her world, but there's still this mysterious element that I really appreciated.
The atmosphere in the snow, it takes place like more around Christmas than anything, or at least wintertime. And just atmospheric, even though, you know, they really only center on the outsides of two houses with, you know, like a fence in between or something like that. They do a lot with.
Yeah, when Amy's, at the end of the movie, when she's running through the forest, she's on a bridge and, you know, it's nighttime, it's snowing, she's cold, and she hears what she thinks is the headless horseman coming down the road and going to cross the bridge. So she like ducks and covers her face, but it's just a car, you know, with, you know, she's just heard the sound of the car. And I love that little detail. And
because
it's like, you know, it's that great little kid thing of you're just, you know, your mind runs away, you know, like the old lady just told you about the Legend of Sleepy Hollow. So of course it's like at the forefront of your mind.
Yeah.
And it happened in my town, you know, it's like, it's right here. The evil, the horseman is still here in the woods.
There was one time when I went camping, Chuck. I was a wee lad, probably 10 or 12. And I woke up in the middle of the night in my tent. My grandfather was like snoring away in his tent, you know, in the same campsite. And I might have been in there with another kid. I can't remember. But I woke up and my sleeping bag was like kind of over my face. But I was just aware that it was the middle of the night. And every time, every couple minutes, like I would hear this like scraping up against my tent wall.
Oh, thank you.
Like it was like a scratching sound. Like, all I could picture was like a hoof or something of trying to get into my tent. And I was pooping myself. And it must have been like a half hour of torture. And what it turned out to be, since it was the middle of the night and complete silence, was my eyelash brushing up against my sleeping bag whenever I would blink.
Wow.
But it stayed with me all these years just because I was so terrified in that moment. I was like Ichabod Crane.
Love that. I love that, Dale.
Yeah. I mean, in my head, something was trying to get through the tent wall.
Yeah, man.
Maliciously.
It's terrifying.
Yeah.
The dark.
Yeah, just like this little girl.
How about the opening scene where Amy is chasing? I thought this was this is great writing. This is that good old fashioned thing of summing up your whole story in a little tiny scene, a little moment to sort of set the tone and what's going to happen. And Amy is like, you know, she's in her own world, you know, she's with her classmates, I think, but she's on her own chasing a butterfly. And it's just this beautiful butterfly in the park or wherever they are. And then this one of her classmates, a little boy, is like, oh, I'm going to help. I'm going to catch you that butterfly. He catches it in his hat, pulls it out, and the camera goes in on his palm, and it's just destroyed. Like, he just destroyed this beautiful creature. And Amy's just like looking, like, she's not even like horrified. She's just sort of like, kind of like, just, I mean, she is horrified, but she doesn't like really show it. But she's just like, oh my God, you know?
Yeah. She's just completely stunned by what.
Yeah. But I love that, because it's like, because it's all about her being in her own little world. And like, you know, people, the other kids don't really want to associate with her. And it's like, you know, that kid destroying that butterfly is like, man, that would have been enough for me to just not associate with anyone. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, people ruin everything.
Yeah. No, yeah. Yeah, it's true. I mean, you try to do your best to reach out and be on the level with them. But really, you know, it's tough sometimes.
And it's like, and it also sets the scene of like what a gentle person Amy is. I was so taken with this little girl. Like, she was just so evocative. Like, just like, she was so gentle and innocent, just like so innocent. Like, I just wanted to like protect her and like tell her everything was going to be okay. You know, she was just so affected by everything and like, she had make-believe friends. And her dad is down her fucking throat telling her that, you know, she's effed up because she has a make-believe friend. And I was like so pissed.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it just affected your whole mood in watching this. Like, your heart was in your stomach as you watched, because she really was being alienated by the people, her peers in her class, for just not even being different. Yeah, no. You know, just, she was never different like you would see today. She was her own free spirit, you know? She was just her own person, and these cliquey kids who were in her class really kind of like, in the best way possible for a movie from 1944, they made it known that they didn't want to associate with her, which was even more heart-wrenching when, you know, her own father was kind of taking the side of everybody else in this movie except for her.
Look, Amy, Mother and Daddy keep telling you over and over again, but you go right on dreaming, and then things like this happen.
If the invitations didn't go, then that means nobody will come, doesn't it? There won't be any party.
He would get so mad at her, and, you know, like, when she would start talking about, when she comes upon the spooky house, and the old woman throws a ring tied to a handkerchief out the window, and it's like, gives her this ring, which I thought was, gosh, that scene, I will probably steal that for something, because I just love that scene. I love that situation.
That would have been affecting, that situation.
And seeing it through her eyes, like, you're this little girl, and you hear this old voice coming out of like the third story window, whatever it was. And then this magical ring comes down, tied to a handkerchief. And then this other woman comes up the walk, grabs a handkerchief out of your hand, and it, you know, gives you this spooky, evil look. And then that's it. Like, that's all you know. Like, that's, you know, that's all you get from this mysterious situation. And she goes home.
Mm-hmm.
God, it was so good. I forget where I even started, why I started talking about that.
Because the dad was...
Oh, yeah. Because, like, she tells her dad that story about, you know, the ring and the old woman. He's just like, Amy, if you don't stop making up these stories, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do. Like, it was horrible. It's like, man, she's a little kid. Yeah. I mean, I guess the whole justification for the thing was that he didn't... Because she was Irina's daughter, who was in the last movie... thought she was a cat person. He was like worried. I mean, she was a cat person, right, Dale?
Yeah, that's why, you know, there's no
I mean, baiting. I think Ollie completely fucking forgot that he saw her turn into a goddamn cat right in front of his eyes. But he is worried that his daughter is going to suffer some mental breakdown like Irina did. So that's why he's freaking out over her make-believe stuff. Which is crazy. I mean, Dale, come on. I mean, is this really where we were at in the 40s? Like, I'm I'm sure kids had make-believe friends like as long as man has been conscious, right?
It was tough to watch because throughout the whole movie, his method of wanting the best for his daughter was threatening her to act like she, like threatening her to act how she, what she didn't believe, yeah. but to fit the image of what he needed her to be, he wanted her to betray herself and
yeah,
be that person because it was affecting him more than the thought of her suffering or
yeah. Know. Yeah, even so, like he was like demanding that. How old was Amy? Did they ever say like her age? You have kids, so you're probably better at judging what how old she was.
Yeah, I would say she was maybe 7 or 8 okay. in it.
Yeah, and he's even like demanding at points in the movie for her to just lie to him, basically. Which is like, yeah. I mean, can you imagine telling a 7, you know, just lie to me so that I feel better and I don't punish you? Like, but, you know, like not lying is like one of the things like kids, you know, your drill into kids, you know, so it's such a, yeah, it was frustrating to watch, but it also made such a great tension for the center of the story.
Oh yeah. It was frustrating because, you know, if Oliver were like this with Irena in the first movie, he was like Prince Charming.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And completely understanding to her plight. He frankly put up with so much more than any other person in his shoes would have, just because he was there for Irena during her whole fear of being a cat, and she wasn't sure. Yeah. And, you know, so to pivot to this almost as being too overprotective because he didn't want to see his daughter suffer the same, but just to the point where he wanted to be lied to and wanted to just believe that everything was okay, no matter what was going on inside of her head.
I just want to...
And when she was being alienated and treated differently and, you know, and she was having an imaginary friend that was the only person that would play with her.
Yeah, yeah. I loved... I just feel like this movie is like, I almost feel like it should be a movie for like goth girls to like idolize. Like I was just so enraptured. I love the detail of her, the day Amy's having her birthday party and no one's showing up. Like none of the other school children are showing up, and they finally like, well, did the butler guy, did he send the invitations? They ask him and he's like, well, Amy said she wanted to mail them, so I gave them to her. She said she was going to put them in the mailbox. And the dad talks to Amy and Amy's like, yeah, I put them in the mailbox in the hole in the tree in the backyard. And I was just like, man, wow. That is the most beautiful thing. Like she had no idea. Like she just thought it was, that's how you mailed stuff. And I thought it was like the sweetest thing. It melted my heart.
I know.
And then when she realizes that none of her friends are coming, she's like, oh no.
Yeah. So this wish ring that gets thrown out of the third floor window, the butler guy.
I think his name's Edward.
Says, you know, when he grew up in Jamaica, it was a wish ring and you had to turn the ring on your finger and a wish would come true. She wishes for a friend. Just so happens that her imaginary friend is Irena, who is her mother. But she never reveals, Irena never reveals that it's, you know, she's the mother.
Yeah. And there's a scene later where she finds a picture in a drawer of her, she doesn't know it's her mother, but it's a picture of Irena. And it seems like they purposely, you know, had her, like, she was imagining Irena before she saw a picture of her, right?
Oh, yes. Oh, my God.
So they're,
God.
Like, really playing, you know, it's like, she didn't see the picture and then make that her imaginary friend. She saw it afterwards. So I was like, oh, wow, that adds a spooky element. Like they purposely did it that way. So Irena starts visiting her and it's like, but it's the most beautiful, pure imaginary friend friendship. There's no hardship. It's all just good feelings. Irena even is like teaching her ABCs in like a cool way. And she's like, this is so much more fun than, you know, the other way I learn.
And Irina just, you know, she just, she's just nothing but loving towards Amy, you know, and she's just filling a hole there that Amy's not getting anywhere else. It's just like a loving friendship.
Yeah. Which is what, that's what imaginary friends are. Like, it's like the textbook definition. It's like, it's, you know, you make up your the greatest friend you could ever have.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's this whole other plot where Amy starts, she gets the ring from this old lady and she starts to visit this lady in her house. And this lady has big, whoever slew Auntie Rue vibes to me. She's like an eccentric old actress. Like she talks about, she used to be on the stage and she got presents from the King of Spain and, you know, and she like sits Amy down and tells her the tale of Sleepy Hollow. And, but there's this element, this old lady, but there's a woman also living in the house. And whenever the woman comes by, the old lady shuts up and just sort of glares at her. And then she whispers to Amy. She's like, I don't trust her. She's not, she says she's my daughter, but she's not my daughter. She's an imposter. And you're like, holy crap. What on earth is going on in this house?
Yeah.
What did you think of this whole B plot? Like, I don't know. I'm convinced that there are layers to this movie that I'm not getting to.
Yeah.
And it's making me very excited to keep thinking about this movie.
That B plot was, it's really got me just spinning it over in my mind too, because I just don't feel like it's as simple as this lady is, you know, half senile and going, you know, with Alzheimer's or something. And she literally doesn't recognize her own daughter anymore.
Yeah.
You know, that's because that's certainly how it's being acted. But she seems to have it all together except when it comes to her daughter.
Yeah. It's almost...
And she insisted her daughter died at a young age, right?
Yeah. She insists it. Even when, like, there's scenes of her daughter pleading with her. She's like, no, I'm your daughter. And she's like, no, my daughter's dead.
Yeah.
I don't know who you are.
My gosh. It's so specific because she used to have a daughter. She just assumes the daughter died. Yeah.
It's almost like, I can't help but think that it's like the mirror image of what Amy's going through with her imaginary friend. This is like the evil version. This is like the other side of the coin. Of like an old woman instead of a little girl, like imagining someone she knew in her life, but she's being made up in her head. And I think that there are hints that this woman is maybe not really there. And it's almost like, it's like the opposite of Amy's imaginary friend. It's like an imaginary foe almost. And I don't know. And then Sleepy Hollow, I feel like that has to, it makes me want to go, you know, read Sleepy Hollow to see if it gives any clues as to what's happening here.
About the just the sheer amount of asbestos used for snow. To see Amy running through the asbestos.
That's that's what I as soon as I saw the snow, I was like, oh no, is that asbestos? It's like, oh god.
Yeah.
She's just, and like there's points of her like falling into it, and I'm like, oh no, she's just breathing that in. Oh god.
Yeah. And there's a scene where she's like running through it and it's just like this baby white powder is just clinging to her black boots. Like, oh man. I mean, I have to assume it's asbestos because it was so widely used between the 30s and the 50s or 60s. Man.
I hope like, not. Awful. I really hope not.
I know.
I think Yoli said in her review, she brought up the Christmas element. Like the middle of this movie takes place around Christmas and I was just enthralled, and I'm like, I think I'm gonna watch this every Christmas now, even though it's not the whole thing is not a Christmas feeling, but those few scenes with like the carolers and the Christmas at home and then this like ghost of Irina appearing in the backyard, I just like, I loved the feeling it got. But then it got sinister when the dad again confronts Amy. I see my imaginary friend right there in the backyard. And he just refuses. He doesn't look. He never looks, which made me so mad. And he's like, no. I know,
he's just staring at Amy the whole
time. Tell me again, do you see anything? And if you say you do, I'm going to punish you. Like,
but she is there.
I tell you, there's no one there. If you deny that, if you insist that this woman you call your friend is in the garden, I'm afraid I shall have to punish you. Do you understand?
Yes.
All right. Now, tell me what you see.
I see Irena.
And it was interesting the way they played this. Like, this was it was a heavy scene. And we watch him, like, take her by the hand, go upstairs to her room. And then, you know, we don't see it happen, but we hear, like, the mom and the school teacher talking about it. And they're like, best you don't go interfere, ma'am, you know?
I know.
And I was like, holy crap, man.
Yeah. He's like, she's like, you know, this is the first time he's ever had to, like, put his hands on her or punish her physically or something. It's like, mother F, like, damn.
She hasn't done anything wrong to deserve it.
I know. It's just like, you look long and hard, take as much time as you need and look over there and then tell me, is she still there?
I felt like it was like being at boot camp, like a drill sergeant, like in her face almost. Just like, tell me.
Yeah. Oh my God.
I want you to fucking lie to me. I know. Just lie to me, little kid.
Oh. The connection starts to kind of come together that, Oliver begins to suspect through the interaction with photos and Amy that Irena is Amy's imaginary friend in some way or another. And he's, you know, practically beside himself.
Yeah. He's not into it.
Because it's a little too, you know, he's in complete denial, but it's also a little too coincidental.
Yeah.
To not be true.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said before, that's his old justification for freaking out. He's worried about his daughter going down the path that Irena did. But man, Dale, I really wanted her to turn into a cat at this point, but it didn't happen. But I'm okay. It's fine. I still love the movie, actually. It's
fine. Maybe she needs to hit, you know, like become a teenager first, like Mew.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah.
That's what it is.
The gene hasn't come out yet. Yeah. She's got time.
Right.
She's going to maul her daddy to death when she turns 16. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. She's going to go right to Panthera mode and she's going to turn into like a cat of prey.
Daddy catches her smoking a cigarette in the garage. Her paw's going to come out. The whole movie wraps up with a cool chase through the woods and the asbestos. And she ends up at the old woman's house. And the old woman ends up dying on the stairwell. Like, she's trying to save Amy from her evil not-daughter-daughter who's coming. But the old woman has a heart attack or something, dies right there in the steps. And then this woman, the mysterious woman, comes out. And she's pissed at Amy. Like, she already threatened to her mother, like, if I ever see that little girl again who's stealing my mother from me, I'm going to strangle her to death. So it's like this tense moment. Oh my God. And then Amy is staring at her and she calls out, she's like, my friend. And then the woman morphs into Irena and then morphs back into the woman. And Amy goes to hug her. And there's like a scene where the woman, like her hands are like coming around her head, like behind her head, like she's going to strangle her. But then she embraces her.
Yeah.
And I was like, what is going on here? What are they trying to get out of me? Like, what are they, like, I love it. I love what they're evoking inside of me, but I still feel like I'm missing something. But it's a good thing. I can't stress that enough. I had a blast with this.
It's a good feeling.
And then she just, she walks out of the room, Dale. And then the cops and the parents come in. And that, I thought that was very interesting that she basically just disappears.
Oh.
Like she wasn't there.
Oh gosh.
Because there's no, like, she's not, like, there, like, oh, explaining, or she doesn't, like, go to her mom who just died on the stairs, you know? She just walks out of the room, and then the adults come in.
Whoa, I didn't pick up on that.
I feel like it had to be purposefully done.
Yeah, the way I interpreted that was even the bad lady was there, but then Irena intervened.
Oh, yeah.
And basically reminded reminded Amy that no matter who the person is, show them love.
Oh, that's
and
beautiful.
Treat them with kindness. Yeah, and like that's that. Ultimately how I took yeah. it. Like she was really there and bad. You know, she was in the mood to hurt Amy, but Irina showed up and reminded Amy that maybe this girl needs a hug. Maybe wow. she grew up without any friends, and you know, she just needs to be reminded that people are there, can be there for her too. And
damn.
That's what Irina was kind of trying to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense, too. I love that one. Damn. This movie delivers, Dale. Wraps up with Daddy kind of learning his lesson. He grows a little bit and he tells his daughter that, okay, I see your make believe friend, too. And I'm not going to be a hard ass about this
yeah,
anymore.
Right. Yeah. Lying to himself yeah. for finally.
Which is kind of cool. I mean, it's a cool thing
Dad.
That it was like, the parent who kind of grew and had to like adjust their perspective. I did kind of, I got off on that a little. That was cool. Yeah. So that was Curse of the Cat People.
It was great.
I give it 12 stars, Dale. We should probably wrap this up.
The meat.
We're done with the meat. And that's
just a meaty episode.
That's all you get. We're throwing the dish right into the sink. That's it. Not yep. even a beverage to wash it
we'll
down.
We'll wash it tomorrow.
Well, yeah, exactly. We'll watch it tomorrow.
Yeah. Typically, this would be Chuck's turn to pick a movie, but we're going to go a little off script only because we think the timing lines up perfectly. And April 16th is the premiere of a brand new movie called Jacob's Wife. Jacob with a K. Jacob. And this movie stars Barbara Crampton and Larry Fessenden. And it's about basically a preacher's wife who, through a series of dangerous calamity, becomes a vampire herself, and ooh. I think kind of gets into the lifestyle.
Mm.
So
the lifestyle.
It premieres on April 16th. So we're not going to be able to. You're not going to be able to watch it up until the weekend before we record, anyway. But it's going to be available on all the platforms where you can stream it. So
yeah, this will be fun. This will be like.
It's going to be fun. Well,
it's our version of a timely, you know, covering a timely movie that, you know, comes out, you know, that's like mm-hmm. a new movie.
Yeah. Finally, one for the Bat and yeah. Spider people yeah, to yeah, get yeah. behind.
I don't know. I mean, we might do that yeah. more in the future when theaters open up, because I imagine, because I love going to the movies. So I imagine there'll be
mm-hmm.
a spooky movie that we could see working for Bat and Spider. I don't know. We'll see.
Oh yeah. We can dream.
That's true.
Chuck, we have Twitter now. We can do whatever we
want.
That's
true. That's very true. The doors are open. My mind is completely open.
There's nothing we can't do now.
It's open.
That's it for this episode. Chuck, I'm leaving for vacation. Ciao.
Bye. Have fun. Don't think about me while you're away. Don't think about this show. Just have fun.
I'll text you every day. Bye.
Our theme song was created by Toby Forsman of Whipsong Music. Find out more at whipsongmusic.com.